So I have to start with three trigger warnings. So my talk mentions abortion, hell, and it could also cause you to doubt your own faith journey. So welcome to BGMC. But I am going to start with a funny video because this talk is carrying on the series that James has started on why I'm still a Christian. So this video combines Christianity and what in the 1980s in London we will call feisty teenagers. So we don't use that word anymore, but these are feisty teenagers. Hopefully the technology is going to work.
Oh my God, what is she wearing? What is she wearing? I'm walking down the street with her looking like that.
That is well shameful.
How are we all? Looking forward to a slice of culture?
Me?
We're all in for a treat today.
Miss.
I'm going to give you your tickets now.
Miss.
I want you to look after them.
Miss.
And don't lose them. Yes, Lauren?
Miss, I'm not being funny or nothing, but have you seen what you've got on?
You're suggesting I don't know what I'm wearing, Lauren?
I don't know, Miss. I thought maybe someone had thrown it at you or something.
Well, I think it's nice to make an effort once in a while.
No, I don't think it is, Miss.
Now, the coach is parked by the main gates.
You going out on the street like that, Miss?
Get on, all your belongings.
But are you going out on the street looking like that, though?
Yes, Lauren.
Oh my God, what have you got on your feet? I'm too scared to look.
Look at them now, Jesus creepers.
That is well bad.
I think it's nice to let your feet breathe.
Are you a Christian, Miss?
Lauren, get your things together.
Are you a Christian, though?
We don't have time for this.
Right, but are you a Christian?
Lauren?
Is the Lord your shepherd, Miss? Is he your shepherd, though?
I beg your pardon?
Have you got Jesus in your heart, Miss?
What?
Is he in your heart, though?
Lauren?
Why'd you wear clothes like that, then?
Lauren?
You like Cliff Richard, Miss?
Lauren?
Are you looking for a dibbly, Miss? But are you looking for a dibbly, though?
No, of course not.
Are we your flock?
What?
Are we your flock, though?
No.
Is it that we are your flock?
No, you're not my flock.
Have you got a friend in Jesus' name?
Oh, for goodness.
Has he got you for a Sunday?
Look.
Has he got you for a Sunday, no.
Lauren, enough. You're just wasting time now, not to mention being incredibly rude to me. Now get your things together, or I shall suspend you from this trip.
Am I bothered?
It's supposed to say why I'm still a Christian. So I couldn't resist that clip. Is you a Christian, miss? It's pretty similar to this talk, which is carrying on the series called Why I'm Still a Christian. So it could be titled, Why Is You Still a Christian, Miss? So I want to start by saying thank you to James for his talk with the same title and for his honesty and openness, but also the challenge he laid down to all of us to be a welcoming group of people pointing to Jesus, to be a place of authenticity and freedom for people to be able to pull up a chair for a chat just as you are. So I found the title of this talk for me challenging, and I've really had to mull over my answer. And I'm not sure I have a very clearly formed answer for you, but I have some ideas. Half my slide is missing, unfortunately, because that should say doctoral bonnet. So for those who don't know me very well, I thought I would start answering this question with where I am now, perhaps thinking about what has led me to still calling myself a Christian today. So currently, I'm working on a PhD in theology, and I'm looking at spiritual formation for Irish women religious, or nuns, as some of you would call them. So I take as my starting point for the work a quote from Philippians 4:9, which says, "Whatever you have learned or received or heard from me or seen in me, put it into practice." And on the screen, I've just listed some of the Irish orders that I'm talking to. So the idea of the PhD is to ask religious women about their faith journey and then to look at how that has impacted their lived lives. And I suppose in a way, this question is similar to that for me. Why am I a Christian and what impact has it had in my life? Or what have I learned or received from Jesus and what am I putting into practice? Because one of the things I've learned is that being and doing for the Christian are very linked. I can't call myself a Christian and it not have an impact on my life. I have to put something of what I learn, see, and receive from Jesus into practice. So in a weird way, the question posed by this sermon is the one I'm digging into for my research, which is a bit weird. So when I was thinking about this talk, I thought about my own spiritual formation. What are all the twists and turns that have gone into me to get to this point of still today anyway, calling myself a Christian? So a few biographical highlights. I was raised Roman Catholic by my Irish parents, well, mainly my mum, as dad has no interest in these matters. And like many people I know, I could have ended up as a lapsed Catholic or what's called a cultural Catholic, meaning I would go to church for Christmas, funerals, baptisms, but not voluntarily. However, there is a thread running through my why I'm still a Christian story that I recognise from those early days. And that is one of questioning, reading, asking more questions, grappling, etc. So I'm calling that part of my story me seeking after God. So for me, there was no question God existed. And for many years, I drank the Catholic Kool-Aid on matters of doctrine. I went to a secondary boarding school looked after by nuns, which was great. I then went on to a predominantly boys' school. That's for another talk on my feminist traits. So I've since found out that my old school used to be a seminary that trained Catholic priests. And we were often told we had amazing theological teaching in that school. Bring it on, I thought. Probably not in that exact language, but yeah, if you know me, you know that was a challenge. So you have to imagine a 16-year-old Bernie with her hand up in a room full of mainly boys, like there was maybe one other girl in the class, and we were debating with a priest about aborted fetuses going to hell or limbo or purgatory, which was Catholic teaching. So the debate hinged on being born with original sin and the necessity of baby baptism to wash away that sin. I hope you're all still with me. Now, if a fetus was aborted, baptism didn't happen. So what happened to the baby's soul? Now, you may say, that's a bit deep, Bernie, as a 16-year-old. But this issue had a logic problem for me, and I was going to convince this priest he was wrong. God was supposed to be loving, but his rules were condemning a whole group to hell with the unhelpful word mystery attached. So in that moment, I decided God could still exist, but I didn't need to have anything to do with him. I felt no loss in that moment. Life carried on. I was now free to live my life without strict Catholic moral codes and daft logical knots about aborted fetuses. So roll on a decade, and I was living in South Africa next to a couple where the husband was training to be a pastor. I was fascinated and a bit concerned that I was living next to members of a cult. So they invited me to church, but no, I couldn't go to their church because it wasn't Catholic. You see, I'd been steeped in the teaching that Catholicism was the one true church and everything else was the work of the devil. However, one thing I did realise at this time was that I missed music. I'd played the piano and been involved in a choir in church and school, all of which had fallen away during uni. So I'd start piano lessons again and did occasionally think of church music. So this couple who lived next door kept inviting me to church, and I kept saying no. Then one night they invited me to a Bible study, and I thought, it can't hurt. It won't be too cult-like because it's in their house, a house I've been in many times for food and chats. I like food and chats, yeah. So Bible study involved us all just sitting around and chatting. There was no expert or priest. And suddenly all those neurons that had been asleep for 10 years bounced back into life. And I remember thinking, I love this. I love asking questions, grappling, arguing, chatting, debating, and testing the logic of things. You see, I love numbers, I love making things work, I love things being neat. When was the next Bible study? Could it be sooner than a week? Then the question came again, would I come to church? Well, it couldn't hurt, could it? So off I went to church with them, to a very conservative USA-run Baptist church plant in the outskirts of Johannesburg. I'm not sure of the map. That is where it was, actually halfway between Johannesburg and Pretoria. And funny, I just remembered this as I was preparing the talk. The first meeting was in a local hall as they had been fundraising to build their own building. So the first few meetings were in a rented building, and I was there when they moved into their own building with all the money raised before they bought the land and built the building. And the building they built is in the pictures and is still there. So the church was led by a chap called John French and his dear wife Christine, and I had the pleasure of hosting them in Bantry last September, but my theological position had moved so far away from them in the intervening years, we couldn't really talk about theology, but we had a nice time. Because Midrand Chapel was a church where women did not lead or preach or I think speak. You could speak through a man, and lucky for me, God was going to provide a new improved man very soon, since the one I had been with had died. So I could start speaking again. So the theological teaching was conservative with a big C, but robust, intellectually challenging, rigorous, and I got to join the music team. So I loved it. I remember fleetingly thinking it was weird I couldn't speak, but it was God's will and I was on board with whatever God wanted. I was so excited for God's will for my life, despite the slight bumps in the road, massive bumps, but you know. So I hung on to the wonderful promises of God, reinforced by being surrounded by totally happy families with loads of kids and husbands that were elders of the church and pillars of their community. I learnt loads. I did all the extra courses, biblical marriage, growing kids God's way. I was getting ready, yeah. Growing kids God's way, for those of you who don't know, is smacking with intentionality and explanation. I did Ramsey's money course, how to do better worship. You name it, I was all in. Then came a discussion about baptism. Now the big problem was I'd already been baptized as a baby and as a Catholic. So this led to many months of unpicking my baby baptism and deciding Christ-like to be baptized as an adult. So I didn't really feel anything at the baptism, if I'm honest, but it felt important to mark this new, changed life. And I seemed to have so many amazing answers to prayer through my journaling and quiet time, and I was just amazing. Well, God was amazing, but you know. And I had tapped into all he had to offer. Now, if that answer to prayer husband would just rock up, everything would be sorted. I had a number of husband options, you understand, but none quite got over the line. So I did an MBA, Masters in Business Administration. There are two universities in that picture, one in Johannesburg and one in New York. I had a fantastic job, loads of friends, great house, holidays, etc. I then changed jobs for more money, which was a bad mistake, and my sister called to say she was pregnant and having her first baby. And suddenly I found myself wondering, why was I still in South Africa? And did I want to miss a baby arriving in London? So a whole other story of amazing answers to prayer. I got offered a job in London whilst in Johannesburg. That doesn't happen. A friend broke up with a boyfriend and decided to come with me, so I had an instant flatmate. So easily and instantaneously, I got back to London in May 2000. But I couldn't find a church until I moved back to Bethnal Green, which is where I'm from originally. I lived in Bethnal Green till I was 9, before going upmarket then to Wood Green in North London. So in 2001, I stumbled into BGMC and I was struck by how similar it felt to Midrand Chapel, 6,000 miles away. After a year of going to churches and not finding any that I liked, I found BGMC just a few metres away from where my journey started as a young Catholic in Our Lady of the Assumption Church, Bethnal Green. So that's the church that's on the slides, and it's literally just behind the museum. BGMC in 2001 was an imposing brick building with no windows on the front and not really fit for purpose, but had lots going on. Music was world class, not, and I fit right in. There were wall-to-wall potential husbands, not, but there was grappling all the time, my favourite, and no question was off limits, and nothing couldn't be pulled apart, checked, and logically probed. I had found my church. So skipping over lots, I'm going to roll on 15 years. My work life had extended to partnering to build developments with charities and other groups, including building schools, churches, and community centres alongside housing. So I was sitting in the old BGMC building thinking, we can do better than this. So we started grappling with the building, again with nothing off the table. The leadership team looked at refurbishment, buying next door, and the ultimate challenge of demolishing and rebuilding. My work had become a contractual part of my relationship with God. I was doing good and pleasing work, and God was going to bless me in so many ways. He was just taking his own sweet time in some areas. So we demolished the building after closing down everything that was in the old building, including the bookshop and after-school club, and went into exile, a period with no building, which when you look at it, when you look back, was strangely freeing. And we built a new building. We built Mike and Lorna a tiny flat upstairs. We came up with the idea of the Beehive Cafe, the welcoming glazed front, the office spaces, the community offering, the partnership with Tower Hamlets on the park. We launched and opened. In this time, a potential husband did arrive. It was all looking amazing until I was dumped by text. Never do that, people. And then I got diagnosed with cancer, part one. To say the wheels came off my life would be the understatement of the century. Life was not only completely pointless, it was going to end soon, having been completely pointless. So that is double pointless with pointless bells on. So I look back and a kind of nihilism I now understand as depression and a kind of breakdown happened. God had not, as far as I could tell in that moment, kept any part of the contractual arrangement I thought we had. I thought I would be good, kind, generous, fabulous, and all those blessings that are promised, air quotes for the recording, in the Bible I could claim as mine. I had been naming it and claiming it, even though I didn't know that. I went to therapy, starting my first session with asking the therapist through tears, if I said the word God, did she have any concept of what I was saying? I thought if she didn't know about God, it'd be very tricky for her to understand my life. She got God, and she was also very good on people who were sick and were not coping. So I started a journey marked by operations, waiting, more diagnoses, more operations, more waiting, and finally bits of good news. And as I say to people, being not dead. There was also a parallel faith journey going on. And when I say faith, I mean chucking in the towel and telling God he could sod right off. And the exit interview, which I'm a firm believer in, would not go well for him. So virtually every Wednesday BGMC book club, I mention the exit interview, which is based on Romans 14:12, which says that at the exit interview, so then each of us will give an account of ourselves to God. I think I could do a whole sermon on that line. But in my worldview, the account of ourselves is more of a two-way conversation. God giving an account of himself to me too. Finally answering the many questions, including, but why? So my faith had crumbled like a sandcastle. It was like it just wasn't there. The questions were still there, but the contract that I clearly felt had existed was broken. So then I had to really unpack what I'd built my faith on. I clearly had a paradigm in my head that said if I did X, like build churches, it's quite big, God would do Y, which mainly involved husband and children, very Old Testament blessings. So in the words of Mike's sermon last week, work had become my worthiness. Without work, who was I? And this leads into another aspect of being in the kingdom of the sick rather than the kingdom of the well. Who was I without my identity tags? Property developer, businesswoman, charity trustee, leader. Now I was a sofa dweller, nightly watching Love Island. And my series was the one where Molly May met Tommy. That's still going on, that story. I wasn't reading. I wasn't really doing very much, and life was very challenging, including for all my nice friends and family who had to be around me being miserable and crying all the time. So often we start questions, conversations with when we meet people. So what do you do? Again, referencing Mike, this question implicitly values productivity over personhood. The question is not, who are you? Tell me your story. No, it's, what do you do? So hopefully you're getting a sense of the personality up here. So I'd taken to responding nothing. When someone asked me what do you do, I'd go, nothing. And that pretty quickly ended conversations. And as an aside, I saw Miranda Hart at Hay Festival last weekend, who has suffered ongoing chronic ill health. And she said she prefers the Elizabeth Gilbert opener for conversations. So what are you excited about at the moment? Which I think is a great alternative question and moves the conversation from productivity to personhood. Yep. So back to my deconstruction, which is what I subsequently figured out I was going through. Even at this point, I think I would have still called myself a Christian, as I was still trying to figure out what was going on with me and the creator of the universe. Very gently, I started to feel better and recover physically despite some setbacks. I made the very difficult decision to give up my job, which meant leaving the family business, which was very hard, and that took a lot of soul searching and wondering, was I doing the right thing? I took time off and was spending less time on the sofa gradually. I then was able to come to a place of thinking perhaps I might be able to do something else, and the PhD came into view. Very tentatively I applied, at each point thinking it won't work, I'll get turned down, it won't work out. I got to a place that if I had no hope and no expectations, I couldn't be further disappointed in life or in God. And that is a hard place to live. And it was actually Jeff on one of our Wednesday night groups that said something that moved me from this place. Jeff explained that in his work with people suffering from addiction, he often is the last hope for people. So despite knowing the statistics of recovery, which are not promising, he is always providing hope to the people that he cares for. He can't live in a place of no expectations and no hope, as for many people, he is their last hope. And for me, that was a wake-up call. I needed to live in a place of hope, even if the hopes were small and delicate. It was depressing to live entirely without hope. So my future focus shifted just enough that there was a tiny sprinkling of hope each day. Another thing that shifted my focus was every night thinking about three things that I was grateful for. So that sounds like a really tiny little thing to do, but for a long time, the usual refrain of, I am not dead, was number one. But gradually it changed to, nothing terrible happened today. One actual positive thing happened. I went for a walk. I heard a good podcast. I had a good chat. I saw some nice friends. I managed to play some music. I read a good book. And slowly it felt as if there were more good days than bad days, and my ability to cope with bad things improved. The well of resilience, which had been empty, was filling up, slowly but surely. So where was God in all of this? Well, I got to a place where I had to junk most of what I thought about God based on the alleged promises in the Bible. So when people talk about God's promises, I want to go straight for the jugular. Name them. What are the conditions for those promises being fulfilled? What are the ifs, buts, maybes and get-out clauses? I'm not letting my gentleness be evident to all in these conversations. But in my grappling and chucking stuff out, some things did stay. I did come to the realisation that it's now very important to me, and I think a promise we can all rely on and is littered throughout the Bible without any ifs or buts, and it is this: God's promise that I will be with you. There are so many references that say this, but I will just highlight one from Psalm 23. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil. You are with me. So in that psalm, it also talks about, even though I walk through the darkest valley, and we all talk about dark times, times where no light gets in. And this leads me to another psalm that's very meaningful for me. And it's Psalm 139, which is really famous. Like, if you read it, you'll know like loads of lines from it. But I think people skip over this bit from verse 11. So the NIV translation says, "If I say, surely the darkness will hide me and the light become night around me, even the darkness will not be dark to you. The night will shine like the day, for darkness is as light to you." And the King James Version says, "Yea, the darkness hideth not from thee, but the night shineth as the day. The darkness and the light are both alike to thee." And I think there's so much in this line, and I picked up a book in Hay, which is the centre for secondhand books, and the book was called Both Alike to Thee, which is that little line in the King James Version. And it's basically a book about Christian mystics. Now, we did a series on these a while back, but many of them experience what are called dark nights of the soul. So looking back, we think we are in dark times, but what does that mean when the darkness and the light are the same to God? I mean, that for me is something so big to sort of grapple with. What does it mean when the darkness and the light are the same to God? I think it's only looking back on challenging times, times in the valley and in the darkness, that we can say that God was with us. At the time when you're in it, it's very tricky. Even though it didn't feel like it, we didn't feel it. It's hard to describe. I think it's true. So what this means is that as much as we grapple for God, God is there grappling after us, being beside us, walking with us, looking after us. Somehow, but it is dark and we can't see him. And that is why I'm still a Christian. So I was going to end with this amazing poem that I keep coming back to. So I was going to read the verse bits, and then if you can also the bit that says all. And I really want to end with this as a sort of prayer, because it just, it's prayer-like. It's all up there. So, for the darkness of waiting, of not knowing what is to come, of staying ready and quiet and attentive, we praise you, O God. For the darkness and the light are both alike to you. For the darkness of staying silent, for the terror of having nothing to say, and for the greater terror of needing to say nothing, we praise you, O God. For the darkness and the light are both alike to you. For the darkness of loving, in which it is safe to surrender, to let go of our self-protection, and to stop holding back our desire, we praise you, O God. For the darkness and the light are both alike to you. For the darkness of choosing, when you give us the moment to speak and act and change, and we cannot know what we have set in motion, but we still have to take the risk, we praise you, O God. For the darkness and the light are both alike to you. For the darkness of hoping in a world which longs for you, for the wrestling and labouring of all creation, for wholeness and justice and freedom, we praise you, O God. For the darkness and the light are both alike to you. Thank you.